My guest this morning is a passionate and vocal campaigner in the war to stop suicide. Mike King calls it war, and I've got some numbers for you this morning. Every 67 hours in New Zealand, a young person kills themselves. That's more than one every 3 days. On average, it's about 130 a year. Our youth suicide rate, which is for people aged 25 and under, is the second worst in the developed world. Our teen suicide rate for young New Zealanders aged between 15 and 19 is the worst. Mike King has been nominated for the Iwa Iterangi Award for Community as part of this year's Matariki Awards. And he's with us this morning. Kia ora, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
You are the hardest working man on radio. You make Mike Hosking look like a dole bludger.
No, seriously. No, no. I don't know about that.
Do you ever have a day off?
I get Sundays off, but I sort of have to start prepping for the next week.
Yeah, exactly.
My attitude with these things, Mike, is that you got to, in this changing media landscape, you got to make hay while the sun shines.
And you got to love it, don't you?
You do, and I do. I'm lucky. I really enjoy it. I really do.
I'm the same. People say to me all the time, it must be really depressing working in the area of work that you do now. I tell you what, working in comedy was more depressing than this. Having the privilege of going around the country and talking to young people and listening to young people and hearing what an amazing and incredible, insightful bunch of young minds it just fills my cup every time.
See, that is surprising in some respects to hear, isn't it? Because I've looked at all the great work you do before and thought, man, this must take a real toll on Mike.
Nah, it's just, the hardest job I have is talking to my generation. My generation is so judgmental. They are so set in their ways and they're so fixated on the belief that our young people are the problem. We're failing to look in the mirror and we're failing to understand that our young people have stopped communicating with us because they're scared of us.
Yeah.
They're scared of the reaction that we will give them. Not physically scared that we're going to beat them or anything, but just the little criticisms that fall so easily out of our mouths and into their ears and the toll that takes on them and how it undermines their self-esteem and it takes away their belief in themselves. So instead of what we think we're doing is building up their resilience and helping them to push harder, but the message they're getting is, these people don't believe in me. They don't think I have any worth. They think I'm hopeless. And, until my generation understands that the way we're pushing our kids is causing all of the problems and undermining their self-esteem and causing this crisis of confidence, nothing's going to change.
See, that's really interesting to hear, because what you're essentially saying is we have a problem with a cycle, don't we? Because today's kids are going to grow up to be tomorrow's adults, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I can remember from when I was just a wee nipper, youth suicide in New Zealand in particular has always been an enormous issue, but it's something we don't seem to make giant inroads into ever.
No. The main problem is, just take the government's youth report from 2012. John Key commissioned a special report, and it was brilliant. It had every expert, every academic, every leading clinician, all the greatest minds in this area talking about the problem.
Yeah.
But in the whole document, there was not one young person. They ignored, it's because the thinking has always been that, because our thinking is young people are the problem, so they can't contribute. We must put them in a room and then tell them what their issues are and tell them what their solutions are. And if you look at it in the cold, harsh light of day like we are now, it is exactly what you said. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, that further undermines the confidence of our young people. They're sitting there going, no one trusts us. I was a speaker last year at the World Indigenous Suicide Prevention Conference, and they decided to include youth, which which was a fantastic idea. But they put them in a completely separate room from the main conference.
Yeah.
You know, and they weren't, you know, they were invited into the main room for half an hour. So it was a 2 or 3 day conference, and they were locked in a room by themselves.
Yeah.
At the back, you know, it's just those little messages. It's just those little messages that, you know, we think we're being inclusive and we think we're doing the right thing. But you know, our message of inclusion is completely different to the message that our young people are getting.
Yeah.
We are completely mucking it up. And in our attempts to do well, we are actually causing more damage.
It's interesting, though, because, and this is purely anecdotal, I feel as though there is an appetite for change. And I don't just mean a change in statistics or anything like that, because, of course, that there is always been an appetite for change in that department, but I feel like there's an appetite for change in the way we approach this. And you know, you even just have to log onto the Herald website and you see the Break the Silence series. There seems to be a groundswell of people in New Zealand, and you are very much at the front of that. People who say, you know what we've been trying to do in the past hasn't been working. We need to not only change the way we tackle this issue, but radically change it. And as quickly as possible. And I think there are more and more people who feel that way.
We are so close. We are almost at the tipping point. But we've been here before. And what I'm seeing now is there are a certain sector of academics and clinicians who are pushing back, who are spreading words like contagion, who are creating fear. I noticed in the New Zealand Herald column. So in 2012, up to 2012, in schools, if someone took their own life, it was only allowed to be described as a sudden death. In 2012, that changed. You were allowed to mention the word suicide. But Olivia from the Herald, she sent out questionnaires to 500 schools. 235 of them who had suicide since 2012 still believed that they weren't allowed to say the S word. They weren't allowed to say suicide. So there is still this confusion out there in the education sector, that suicide is still a word that they are not allowed to use. And
yeah.
I really think the change has come about, and the pushback has come about, especially from young people, with 13 Reasons Why. That has really, really put it into the spotlight.
Yeah.
And it's really, so those who want to maintain the silence all came roaring in with this glorifies suicide and it glorifies sexual abuse. And the kids have come back and they've gone, yes, but it's a real thing that's happening. And you don't think this stuff is already happening in schools? And I don't think that they were quite ready for the backlash that came from our young people who said, stop treating us like children.
Yeah.
You know, so they've really had to rock back now. And social media has changed the landscape completely. So whereas they could control the media before and they could control the output of material, social media and young people in particular are saying, now hang on, we have a voice and we are going to use our voice. And so, you know, we've got a bunch of officials in Wellington who are scurrying to catch up and going, you know, what can we do? And the simplest thing to do is just breathe, people. Breathe and start listening. Stop coming out with your counter arguments and actually sit, look into the eyes of these young people and listen. And you will find what an incredible, incredible generation of young people that we have helped develop, you know, and we need to pat ourselves on the back for that. You know, it's not all our fault. We've done an incredible job. But in doing this incredible job with these young people, now we're not listening to them.
Mike, I know you don't want to make anything about you, and the nature of your work is to focus on everyone else. But I just, for a few minutes, want to speak about you, if we can. if you're comfortable doing so.
No, I'm not comfortable. It's so un-Kiwi, Jack.
It is very, very, very un-Kiwi.
Such a, you know, like when just you're gone. Where you go? But I'll stop you if you get
too dizzy. I just wondered if you ever, you know, stop and look at your life, and if you kind of feel as though you've lived life in two parts.
Absolutely,
because you've just like you just hit a bend, and then it just went a completely different direction. You know.
Yep, and you know, I honestly, this is going to sound really crazy, but I owe that change to the death of five young people by suicide in Northland. You know, and having to go up and talk to a bunch of kids who had lost five of their friends, and I was going to go up there and tell jokes and cheer them up. Walking into a room and just seeing the toll that this, you know, the death of five friends takes on a community, and then actually humbling myself and being truthful with myself for the first time ever in my life, being truthful with other people and taking off my mask and talking to people about my struggles, and then watching them, because, you know, I'd honored them by giving them information that they could hurt me with, telling them about the tears that I had in my bedroom and crying at night about moments and, you know, all stuff that Kiwi males don't talk about, and then having them take off their masks and share with me their journey. And it was just mind-blowing. It was truly humbling and mind-blowing. And in that moment, after them recognizing themselves in my story and me recognizing myself in their stories, you know, why don't you talk to your parents? Why don't you talk to your teachers? Because when we do, they make it all about them and they make us feel worse. Yeah. And then sitting there going, oh my God, I do that.
Yeah.
And then some of the comments that they were saying, you know, like I was talking to a young gay boy who was feeling suicidal, and he was so reasoned with it. You know, he wasn't in tears or throwing his toys around. He said to me, I said, why do you feel suicidal? You look incredible. You know, you've got it together. He goes, every time I hear the words fag, homo, gay boy, poofta, even from people I love who I know are not directing them at me and are not wanting to hurt me, every time I hear these words, I feel completely invalidated, and I think, what's the point? And I'm sitting there going, oh my God, I do that for a living. Yeah. I say that stuff out loud.
Yeah.
I'm killing people with my words. And it was just, it was such a profound moment that I really did know at that point that, you know, comedy was done for me. I just couldn't do it.
You know what I think it is that makes your work so valuable and your impression so important, is that when I think back to Mike King, the comedian, Mike King, who was always on telly, cracking jokes with the lads, you were the very picture of that testosterone-y, tough Kiwi male.
Horrible.
No, well, you know, and I mean, you were the big, you know, you and yep. You know, we go back to the Matthew and Mark days and all the Game yep. Two Halves, all that sort of yep. stuff. You were the yeah kind of guy.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then all of a sudden, no, you came out and it was like a slap across the face to society, and it was like, hang on, here's the guy who typifies the big tough Kiwi male, who's actually yep. admitted that, you know, that is a facade, and that is something that so many people can relate to.
Yeah, well, and the incredible thing is there are so many genuine, staunch Kiwi blokes out there that want to take their masks off. I spoke to 300 construction workers a couple of weeks ago out at Māngere, working on the road to the airport, and you know, again, I shared the same story I shared with the kids up north, and it was incredible the amount of men who came up and hugged me and said, you know, you have just told my life story up there, and now I have to go home and talk to my kids.
Mm.
So it's an empowerment process. See, in New Zealand, we've got a prescriptive approach to everyone. We don't give people an opportunity to make it my decision to change. We do this prescriptive thing. You must do this, you must do that because you've done this. And you know, as Kiwis, we all sit there, whether we're male or female, you go, who the hell do you think you are? Yeah. But, you know, Kiwis, we're storytellers. You know, and we recognize ourselves in other people's stories. That's why the Nutter Club is so popular, because you can recognize yourself in someone else's story, and it's your decision to do something with that information. And 99% of us go, you know what? I'm going to change. Yeah. I have to change. You've given me a reason to change because my attitude is killing my kids.
Yeah. You know what it is, Mike? You don't do your stand up anymore, but I wanted to know, do you still crack jokes and do you still laugh?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Like, you know, that's what one of the biggest things teachers and reception, you know, the lady on the reception at the school who doesn't teach the kids, is not in their face every day but sees them, she goes, you know, they always go, I have never heard so much laughter ever.
Yeah.
You know, it's all, you know, people, if you can deliver a strong message with humor, it sticks with people because people go away and go, that was so funny.
Yeah.
But you know what? He had a point.
Yeah.
You know, there was a point there. So I use my comedy now, but the butt of the joke is me. I'm not hurting other people. I'm the butt of the joke now.
Yeah.
You know, my attitude. I talk about my mistakes, not only my mistakes growing up, which led to my alcoholism and drug addiction. I talk about my mistakes in parenting. I'm privileged to have three generations of kids, you know.
Yeah.
My oldest son is 31, 27 and 19. Then I've got a 15 and a 14-year-old. Then I've got a 3-year-old and a grandson who's 3 and a granddaughter who's 5.
Yeah.
And the difference in these three generations is profound, you know, in terms of their mental well-being. And the only difference in these, if I applied the common factors that we apply in New Zealand, so you go economics. Well, I was a millionaire with the oldest kids, and, you know, I was doing really well traveling around the world, being a famous guy. With these younger ones, I live humbly in South Auckland, so it's not money. Education. My oldest kids went to diocesan school for girls. They went to St. Cuthbert's and Mount Albert Grammar. My youngest kids, they go to Papatoi South. They're Sile 2, so it's not that. And the only difference in these three generations kids' lives was me. Yeah. And how I parented them, you know. And I look at the way, with my older kids, I was my dad, my house, my rules, because I said so. You know, with the other ones, of course you can have your say. You finished? Good.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And the third generation is, no, come on, hang on. She has an opinion. Everyone listen. You know, yes, you're entitled to your opinion, baby. Please speak, please, you know. So it's, you know, and when you do that, you empower, you know, kids to change. You know, that you're not making them spoiled little brats. You're not just patting them on the head for the sake of patting them on the head. You are encouraging them and letting them know that their voice has value.
Yeah.
What you are speaking to speaks to me and makes me proud, and that builds self-esteem.
Yeah.
And kids with great self-esteem will never go on to be bullied, will never be depressed, because they are comfortable with who they are, because I made them comfortable with who they are. I validated them, and I made them feel confidence. Now, confidence is what our kids need, not resilience.
Yeah.
You know, we should forget about this, you know, this bottom of the cliff approach. If we build confidence, we don't need resilience training. We don't need any of that. We just, you know, we are building confident young Kiwis who are, and you know, going out into the world and open to everything that is going on in the world, rather than leaving my house and fearing what other people will say about me or to me.
Mike, thank you so much for the work you do. Please keep fighting the good fight, and all the very best for the Matariki Awards. We could honestly speak for hours, and I know we'll be seeing your face and hearing your voice plenty more as you continue the great work you do. All the best and have a good weekend, yeah?
Love you, Jack. Thanks, bro. Bye-bye.
Thanks, man. That's Mike King. Mental health campaigner, the head of Mike King's Life Charitable Trust, Key to Life Charitable Trust. Those Matariki Awards are on July 21st. We'll keep you updated with the winners. He's an incredible man, isn't he, Mike King? He is an incredible man with an incredible story doing incredible work.